understand that the department's doing a lot of things, some things to help us, such as the marketing plan. I know Carrie's worked with me on that. And I think that's important to everybody in the state. Locavores aren't just people who harvest their own food. They're people who buy locally produced food. So I would like to see a little more commercial representation on the various work groups, but I appreciate this chance to comment, and I'm looking forward to seeing the next version. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Robert, for your comments. Any questions over Robert?
Question, Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner McKaysey.
Thank you. Mr. Suter, you've been very good at providing some written comments in the Columbia River arena. On this matter of the strategic plan, it might be useful for the staff to see some specifics as to where you think language should be put in and what kind of language. And so I would just encourage your involvement in submitting something for the staff to have a look at.
I will work at that. I intended to fill out at least the online form, and I've been a little overwhelmed with other comments. You probably are all overwhelmed by my comments, and so but I won't let the opportunity pass. Thank you very much.
Robert, thank you. Tess, we have one more on the phone line.
Yeah, it looks like a phone number ending in 1550. If you want to go ahead and state your name.
Yes, this is Bryce Devine. I was signed up this morning to testify, and then I didn't participate, and I see you're ahead of schedule. I just got the notice a minute ago, so I jumped on. I wanted to comment on the Columbia River policy. I've been participating in the Select Area Fisheries in Oregon this spring, and I've, as of June 6th, the total catch was 2,130 fish so far. I've been going about three times a week whenever it's in, fishing a tide a day, and I've been very poor. I've got 50 fish so far for the year. So if you take the average that out, the participation is really low. We don't have any select area operations in Washington State. Oregon's providing the only thing so far, and it's Oregon's is really weak. And, I mean, we're desperately in need of this reform going forward because this fishery is just dying. And if we're going to have commercial fisheries continue in Washington, we need some support through this Columbia River reform action. So, anyway, that's all I have. Thank you.
Bryce, this is Commissioner Carpenter. We are on the strategic plan planning agenda. The next item up is the Columbia River discussion. I don't know how long the wait might be there, but do you want to wait and talk on that and speak on that agenda, or we can just take what you said? I mean, it's your call. I just want to give you that option.
Well, I'll tell you, if you're, I know how the testimony goes. You have a long line of people, and I think you've heard what I have to say. I could say more, but I think you kind of get the drift of where I'm at, so thank you.
Okay.
Next
okay. Bryce, thank you for your comments. Any questions of Bryce? Okay. Jeff, that concludes the open public comment piece. Does anyone on the commission have any follow-up comments, discussion for staff?
Barbara does.
I see your hand now, Barbara. Commissioner Baker, please.
This isn't well, my comment for staff is much like Nate said yesterday. Jeff and the people that are working with him on this thing have done yeoman's work. For the commission, though, I wanted to make a couple of points. We in the Big Tent Committee, well, wait a minute, I want to start this. You know, we've all heard this saying that the best time to plant a tree is 10 years ago. And that's the way I look at this plan. When we started it, and Kelly Suswind and Jeff were talking about 25 years, I was personally kind of, I shrugged at that. I said, that's too far. You know, we need to get to work now. And through this process, as we've figured out how this plan works, I am absolutely convinced that that was the right way to go. many of the species that we are charged with protecting and the rest of that have lifespans that, you know, that we'll only have a few lifespans between now and 25 years. But my hope very strongly is that the people who are in our seats in 25 years look back and say, dang, it's a really good thing that they were foresighted enough to look at the pressures that were going to be laid upon our fish, our wildlife, and our lands, and figure out ways to try to continue to do the conservation work that we have to do. That's what this plan is about. This is a change document, and it in no way is designed to think ahead about, you know, who's going to be catching which fish or wildlife conflict or those types of the battles that we work on every single day. We're going to keep doing that. There's nothing to say that we won't still be doing the work that we are doing now and have done since I've been on the commission. This is looking ahead, trying to make sure that in 25 years there are fish to catch and there are elk to shoot and watch and photograph and land to walk on for the citizens of this state. The things that were alluded to but maybe not called out completely is that there are two prongs to this plan that are pretty important. One is that we are going to try to envision what we need to do in the short term and as we head toward 25 years, but we can't do all of that or even part of it by ourselves. We have to establish strong partnerships, maybe stop competing with some of the other natural resource agencies. We have to really work to get the nonprofits that have all been so helpful in their own ways and try to get people together and figure out what we can each do to further this mission. And then the other thing is the buzzword's relevancy. We need to have what we do be understood by all the citizens of this state, not just the people that currently use our services. And so the best time to plant a tree is 10 years ago. I think we're planting a little bitty twig now, and I'm pretty proud of the way it is unfolding. I look forward to crisper performance measures so that it actually really means something. But I think that that the people at the agency have really stepped up on this one. And if we actually get anything close to this adopted by the commission, I actually think it's going to be it'll be an example for other states. There are other states currently interested in what we're doing and watching us pretty closely. So I'm pretty proud of us right now.
Good comments, Commissioner Baker. Commissioner Bukaisik.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner Baker and Commissioner Thorburn and Commissioner Smith have all said very complimentary things about the staff, and I want to agree to that. As a newcomer to the Big Tent Committee, they deserve a lot of credit. But I'd also like to recognize Commissioner Baker on this matter. She's been very persistent at the Big Tent Committee, bringing this kind of thing up, and on those occasions, giving the kind of inspirational talk that she just did right there that has really kept this ball running. And it's good to have that kind of big overview always in the focus of the bigger goal. And so anyway, I just want to say thanks to Commissioner Baker for her leadership on this to get us to this point, and we look forward to the month of August.
Thank you, Commissioner Bukaisik. Okay, Jeff, Rob, thank you very, very much. Look forward to hearing more. I think you're on a positive track here, and appreciate the positive perspectives.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Okay, now we've already done public comment, so let me move past that. We're a little bit ahead of schedule, but not too bad considering. The next item is a Columbia River Salmon Fishery Policy Review Briefing and Public Comment. We're about 45 minutes ahead. Is there Nikki, is Hannah available where maybe we could slide in that 20-minute Mazama pocket gopher thing? I don't want to get too far ahead on the Columbia River piece because I know we're going to have some comments. Is that something we could do?
Let me ask her. She's on here now.
Okay.
Larry?
Yes, Barbara?
I might be looking at an old agenda, but this one says that Columbia River is supposed to start at 2:15. Is that wrong?
I'm sorry, mine says 2:50, so I don't know.
I'm probably old.
Yeah, I believe it is 2:50 on the website.
The pocket gopher piece is a 20-minute piece. I thought if we could slip that in, that would match up better, I think. So there's Hannah. Does that work for you, Hannah?
Sure.
Any objection from the commission to swap this?
Hearing none. It's always a pleasure to see Hannah. The sooner the better.
I would love the opportunity to reach out to my colleague, Derek Stinson. Is he on yet?
I don't see him yet.
Hannah, if you're able, we'd like you to start.
I will just do it. I just need to pull it up. You got it. Give me just 1 second.
Hannah, Eric here. I will see if I can't get Derek to chime in, so don't worry about multitasking. I'll see if I can find him.
Thank you, Eric.
Just going to pull up the presentation. I'm excited to bring this to you all. Thank you so much for your time. We're going to be talking about Mazama pocket gophers as soon as I find it. And here it is. Now it's going to load. Maybe I'll start while it's loading to let you know that what we're going to do today. So what we brought for you is a presentation on a joint document that we've produced. So it is a periodic status review of the Mazama pocket gopher and, happily, a recovery plan of the Mazama pocket gopher. So the periodic status reviews are documents that we bring on forward to you every 5 years on all our listed species for a recommendation on status of our species. Either to maintain its current status or change it up or down or remove it from the list. And so I'm going to do that. And then I'm also going to bring the recovery plan, which is really exciting for us to have this forward. And it outlines the path to recovery so that what will it look like so that when we can come before you and say a recommendation to ultimately delist or downlist. Eric's telling me to turn off my VPN.
Yeah, there's a little bit of an audio issue. I don't know if Tess, do you have any, or is it, maybe it's just on my end, but it's...
No, I think it might be the VPN. So if we get the presentation loaded and then we can do a turn off of the VPN, then we'll probably go more smoothly, but we don't want to undo that operation so you can't find the presentation.
No.
Exactly. I'm sorry, I was pretty close to presented or to ready, but almost there. Okay, it loaded up, and then I will share my screen. Number two. Okay, can you see it?
Yes, ma'am.
All righty. Okay, like I was saying, this is a joint document, the periodic status review and the recovery plan. And I'm excited to bring it to you. So here we go. Maybe. Come on, there it is. Okay, so the Mazama pocket gopher is a inhabitant of the South Puget Sound prairies and dry grasslands in Washington. It historically occurred across much of the large grasslands here in South Puget Sound. And it is a really cool critter. I'm going to show you a little video here to try to liven it up for you. You can see most of the time what you see of a Mazama pocket gopher is down here on the bottom left, those mounds. Not quite as exciting, but here you can see the gopher in action. So you see those large paws. They bring those the dirt to the top of the prairie, and are often thought of as a keystone species. So for their role in nutrient cycling and providing opportunities for vegetative growth, as well as their burrows play a role for other species that will use them, even things like western toad, who is a state candidate species. Okay, so here's a little bit about their distribution. So it, both historically and currently. So on the left-hand side, you can see the black polygons and the hash polygons, and those are the historic distribution. There used to be 8 subspecies of the Mazama pocket gopher in Washington, and currently we have 5 subspecies occurring primarily on the grasslands of South Puget Sound, and one in the Olympic National Park. On the right, the map there, all that brown, those brown blobs, are the historic prairie soils. And you can see that the blue is the gopher distribution. That's those are actual gopher locations, and they overlap very closely with the soils. So, you know, a gopher, that, an animal that digs in the ground, relies heavily on the, its substrate. Okay, just quickly, it's state and federal status. So in 2006, we listed the Mazama pocket gopher at the species level, so anywhere that it occurred in Washington, as threatened in 2006. And in 2014, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service listed 4 of those subspecies, so they listed at the subspecies level as threatened. And those ones are only the ones that occur in Thurston and Pierce County, so not the subspecies that occur in Mason County or in Clallam County. Habitat loss is the biggest pressure on the Mazama pocket gopher. So loss, fragmentation, and the continued development. You can see the map on the right. I know it's a little bit busy, but this is the South Puget Sound. You can see Olympia, Lacey, and Tumwater there in the center. And the hash marks, the hashed areas are zoned development. So 1 to 5, one dwelling per 5 acres or 1 dwelling per 10 acres in the surrounding areas. And that underlying orange and brown, those are those gopher soils. And so you can see that the development of the urban growth area, the gray, overlaps the gopher soils pretty significantly, as well as the development. So that continued development pressure is the biggest threat facing Mazama pocket gophers. They and then associated things like roads and domestic pets and traps or poisons, as well as habitat degradation, particularly invasive species like Scotch broom. The good news is that we're conservation has been underway for many years. We have been focused because the largest threat is habitat loss. Our primary conservation action is focused on habitat protection and restoration, as well as a host of associated surveys and research to better understand distribution and the ecology of the species. And we're doing this in collaboration with many strong partners here in South Sound, including the Joint Base Lewis-McChord, who's a very strong partner, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the nonprofit Center for Natural Lands Management, and many others. So conservation and management's been going on for a long time, and we'll continue. Okay, so I'm going to pivot to the recovery plan. Again, I mentioned earlier, this is the sort of the vision for the future, and it sets out really clear milestones for what recovery looks like. Our overarching goal is to secure and maintain self-sustaining populations that are representative of all the distinct groupings of Mazama pocket gopher in Washington. And in development of this plan, we use these tenets of representation, redundancy, and resilience to guide how we put that together. Okay, so that was the overarching goal, but then we have specific objectives. And those are to have Mazamapaka gopher populations persist. Audio. Sorry if you're not hearing me very well.
Are you still connected to VPN, Hannah?
Oh, I disconnected.
Oh, it's so unfortunate. We can still hear you. It's just a little bit meh.
Maybe I'll talk slower. And so when I, you know.
Yeah.
I know I have a tendency to talk fast, so I'll try to slow it up a little bit and hopefully that will help. So our recovery objectives are to ensure that these populations of, that we have those secure populations of gophers in the 7 geographic areas encompassing those major genetic groups in South Puget Sound. And those are represented here in that map. And those, again, that under that orange under on the bottom is the soils. Okay, when we were putting together these population objectives, we did some science, and our population modeling indicated that populations of 1,000 gophers or greater were modeled to have a 98% probability of persistence for 50 years. And then to sort of think about, well, how big of a place do we need to host that many animals? Our limited data suggest that about 5 to 10 animals per acre. And so that, plus typically we don't expect the species to occupy the whole place all at one time. We see gopher populations sort of move around a little bit in the bit of the sort of micro way. And so we made the assumption that maybe about 40% of an area would be occupied at any one time. And so population of 1,000 gophers or greater would need somewhere between 250 to 500 acres to persist. So that's about how big those places need to be to support that large population. And then we also looked to have more than one population in each recovery area when possible. Okay, so now I'm going to talk to you about the reserves and sort of where we envision those populations to persist. We have sort of two pieces, two ways of constructing those reserves. One would be what's represented on the left here, this reserve core. So it would be one large place, or in many spots we may not be able to find a large place to host that many gophers. And so it would have to be pieced together with these smaller satellite reserves that would be connected with what we're calling protected. I'll go through those pieces a little. So the reserves and the reserve complexes would be, so that security piece, they'd be committed to perpetual management for Mazamapaka gopher, and development rights would be retired by easement or deed, and that they'd contain enough of that preferred soil to support those 1,000 animals. And then each of those satellites would be perhaps greater than 10 acres, not large enough by themselves to support Paka gopher persistence, but connected by that matrix. And what is that matrix? The matrix would be those perhaps multi-use public lands like an airport or parks or private rural or low-intensity agricultural lands that would be protected by easement or agreements and that would have management that's compatible with gopher dispersal or occupancy. So we don't necessarily expect that matrix to host gophers all the time, but that gophers could move through and be able to connect between those satellites. Okay, so all that put together, what is the milestone? What is it we're looking for? So our listing process, we have 3 statuses, right? We have endangered, threatened, and sensitive. Gopher is currently threatened, and so we would consider downlisting to sensitive when each of those reserve complexes in greater than 5 of the 7 recovery areas supports 1,000 gophers. So we would pick off 5 of the 7, and then we would consider delisting, removing from the list altogether, when all of the reserve complexes, all seven, support those 1,000 gophers or the numbers that they need for a 20-year period. So we would look to ensure persistence. Okay, now to the meat of it, or exactly what that looks like. So on the left here, this table represents this subspecies of gophers that are in the recovery plan. You'll note that the Yelmensis group has three unique genetic groupings within it. And so those are broken out as well. And so the column, the middle column, that's the downlisting target. And then the column on the right, the delisting target. So the numbers of reserves or reserve complexes that we would want to see to consider changing status. Again, good news. We've been doing a lot of this work for a long time. And so we have, we're in a place where we may even be in three of the five that we need for downlisting, where we can say, hey, we've got that. Some of those are our wildlife areas and other places, partner lands. So I'm really encouraged that although we're just now putting our recovery plan together, we've been moving towards recovery for a long time. Okay, so, but we're not there yet. So our recommendation to you all is to retain the threatened status of the species. We did send this out for public comment. We received 17 public comments, and about 5 or 6 of them were very supportive of the listing and recovery action. 11 or 12 were not supportive of either this action or endangered species work in general. And with that, I'm summing it up. And I'll take your questions. Oh, and I'll stop.
Commissioner Linville.
Thanks for that, Hannah. I am very curious about the 20-year time frame for delisting. I'm just wondering how that number was chosen. That seems like a really long period of time. Is there something about the species specifically that requires that long of a time frame, or is it habitat related? I'm just curious about that.
Yeah, I wish Derek were here to help me answer that question. And, for a delisting process, we really are looking at that longer term time frame to make to ensure persistence, right? And it wouldn't be, I think we could start that 20 years right now in some of those places that are already in place. So it wouldn't be, oh, we move down list and then 20 more years. I think it could be the whole period of time. So may not seem quite as onerous as it needs to be, or it may perceive. I'm sorry, I don't have the answer on the ecology question.
Oh, no, that's okay. Thank you.
I can jump in there. gopher populations go up and down. They're, like any rodent population. And so that was just a number that there isn't a lot behind that other than it was certainly seemed long enough. There are several HCPs in the works, federal HCPs, and the duration of those are generally 30 years. So to ensure stability of the populations and persistence, we just, used a number. And it's not really etched in stone that if things... if we had the populations and things seem to be stable, we could revisit that and consider a downlist or a delist sooner.
Thank you. We have Commissioner Baker with her hand up, and then Commissioner Thorburn, please.
Excuse me. I have a comment and a question. But a statement first. The pocket gopher for my area is like the wolf up in Northeast. It has been an extremely contentious and aggravating issue in this area for years, way for at least 10 years. And so I am, number one, I'm shocked that we only got 17 comments. I'm not shocked that, you know, two-thirds of the comments were opposing this process, but I'm wondering how and when and if we publicized this meeting, because usually anything involving pocket gophers brings out hundreds, if not thousands, of people. So that's one question. My other question is, I think what I'm seeing here and why it might take 20 years is that our recovery plan is essentially providing habitat for these little creatures. And if we do that and it's suitable habitat, I think the idea is that they will recover themselves. And so are we talking about buying this habitat? That's my real question. This is a pretty populated county, and the places where the gophers are changing land use laws, or where people are aggravated because they can't build a shed in their backyard, are like neighborhoods and stuff. And so how are we going to come by the property to provide this habitat? I'm very supportive of providing the habitat. It just seems like a heavy lift.
Yeah, thank you, Commissioner Baker. I was a little surprised myself on how few comments, public comments, we received. So to your first question, we did publicize it with a press release and on our website and through the commission process. And I'll be interested to see if we folks are providing public comment here now. as far as the how are we going to get there and are we thinking about buying everything? No, not necessarily. But acquisition from voluntary willing landowners is absolutely offering incentives like leases and perhaps management agreements, or how can we help landowners contribute. The other piece that's in play here is the federal process. So the ESA, they are ESA listed species, and Derek mentioned that you have conservation plans that are underway and are in development, both for the Bush Prairie area, which is the Tumwater Port of Olympia area, where the gopher exists, as well as the rest of Thurston County. So Thurston County itself is working on a habitat conservation plan that will guide and develop some of those, would create the opportunities for both economic development and conservation together.
Okay. Commissioner Thorburn.
Thanks. Derek and Hannah might have touched a little bit on my questions in their responses to the previous questions, but I'm a little bit confused about the listing status and then the recovery areas. So we've listed five subspecies as threatened, or six. Are they considered threatened separately? So could the listing change per subspecies, or will it be all subspecies before the listing changes? And then the second is how do those subspecies, the recovery plan requires that we have recovery in 5 of 7 gopher areas. How do the subspecies relate to those areas? Would that leave behind a couple of subspecies with that recovery status? If I am clear with my questions.
I think I understand you, Commissioner Thorburn. Thank you for the question. So the first piece, and Derek can correct me if I get some of it wrong, is we have listed at the species level. So currently, Mazama pocket gopher, wherever they occur in Washington, are listed as, I think we could, if we chose to modify that to list at the subspecies level. We do have other subspecies that are listed of different critters. Right now, we're looking toward, the recovery plan is written such that we would recover all of the subspecies at once. As far as the five of the seven, would that leave some behind? So the five of the seven is the it's to downlist to sensitive, while we're still still be working on the rest. And so I don't envision, or I wasn't envisioning, we would be certainly leaving any behind. The objective would be to recover all. And you'll notice perhaps that there isn't a recovery objective identified for the Clallam County subspecies that does occur up in the Olympia National Park, because the threats are not there. And we consider it sort of okay right now. So to that sort of, maybe that speaks a little bit to your question, Commissioner Thorburn.
Commissioner Linville?
Directly to it, thank you.
You got to unmute, Molly. There you go.
I finally succumbed to forgetting to unmute myself. I'm curious if there's been any thought put into maybe, because the habitat in Thurston County is so uniquely urban, I'm wondering if like sort of a system of like mitigation banking might sort of work for habitat. And I was just wondering if that's been talked about or if that's maybe a possibility.
Absolutely. Yes, that absolutely has been talked about. In fact, there is a process and a site identified and even purchased to stand up mitigation banking in Thurston County. It's not quite there yet, but it's definitely part of the conversation, and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is very engaged in that conversation, and we're talking with them as well.
Okay. Anything else on this agenda item? Okay. Hannah, thank you for moving your schedule up, matching up with our out of sync here a little bit, but thank you very much. Have a good weekend.
Thank you very much.
Okay, folks, we are now moving to the